way, this is Downstream, a podcast about the present and future of television. This is episode number 108, recorded December the 11th, 2025. I am, as always, your master of ceremonies, Jason Snell, and I am joined once again by the West Coast editor at Vulture, Joe Adalian. Joe, welcome back to Downstream. Great to have you back.
Hello, hello, Jason. It is good to be back in the welcoming arms of the Downstream.
Very nice. We got to talk to Alan Sepinwall. I captured another person I've been reading for a zillion years and got him to be on a podcast. So my adventures continue. It was fun to talk to Alan about going out on his own from Rolling Stone. Fun episode last time. Glad he
is the best.
It.
Everyone needs to subscribe to what Alan's watching and support him because yeah. Rolling Stone is idiots. And no, I was at Alan's wedding and I've known him forever. And he's just, we're little baby reporters at the TV Critics press store back in the 90s. And he is a BMF of a man now. So
yeah. So he's doing it. And it was great chatting with him. Just a little surreal to chat to people that you've been reading for a long time for the first time. But I'm glad I get the sense that he's working as hard as he can right now to establish himself. So
he is. Well, he is. Well, look, he's established. He just has to establish a business
his
model
business,
until,
yeah,
until someone hopefully recognizes and assuming he wants to go that back to traditional media. But if someone does, New York Times, many places,
well, they better work fast or he's going to establish himself and then they're not going to be able to.
They won't need him. Yes. You know, that would be great.
He'll be able to do it on his own. You wait, take it from me. You do it long enough and you're like, oh, I've got it set up now. Why would I go back?
So. Fondest memories of Alan include singing the theme to Silver Spoons on a road trip, and him also right after I moved to LA, and I was just, long story, I was just about 30 years old and moved to LA, hadn't really driven because I'd been East Coast and, you know, long story, but whatever. So I was going in the, still very new to freeways and very nervous, and he gave me some advice about when to brake and when to pull off the road, and it's just like, I still use it today and I think of Alan as I drive. So, you know,
amazing.
Thank you, Alan. He's amazing. Not just a TV critic. He's a driving instructor.
He's a driving instructor. I love it. I love it.
What can't he do?
All right. Well, there's a lot going on that we have to talk about. And you and I were talking about before we got started about, like, I don't know if this is the reason I got into this business, but it's, you know, I feel that way every time I cover Apple financial results and things like that. It's like, I used to skip the business section of the newspaper and now here I am with charts about corporate earnings. So we're going to talk, obviously there's a lot going on, some huge stories out there. We're going to start with something that is actually big. It's just comparatively small compared to some of the other things going on, which is Bob Iger is doing it again, as you wrote in Vulture.
My editor wrote the headline, so if you like it, credit him. If not, not my fault.
It's mysterious, but also very funny. So this is Bob Iger has made a deal with OpenAI, where they are going to invest $1 billion. They're paying, you know, $1 billion there to buy a stake in OpenAI, and they are licensing its characters into the Sora, which is the short form video platform, which means that you will legally be able to make videos using AI featuring Disney owned characters in a real interesting moment, given that most of Hollywood and people who own intellectual property in general have been fighting AI companies and saying, you need to pay us. We need to, you know, you can't just rip us off like that. And so now there's a deal. What do you think? You know, what do you think this means? What is Bob Iger up to here? Is he seeing the future and getting ahead of it, or is he ruining everything for everybody? What's going on?
You know, part of what I thought about when I first heard about this deal, my mind immediately flashed back 20 years ago. Mm. Actually, 20 years ago in October. And Bob Iger, picture it. Cupertino,
I was
2005.
There.
Yeah, you were probably there. Yeah, so you know where there. I'm going here. And I was in Los Angeles covering this for Variety at the time, and getting the press release. And I might have even gotten a heads up before, maybe not. I don't know. But I remember the ABC people calling me saying, "This is big," and it was. And it was, of course, Bob Iger, who at that point had only been CEO of the Walt Disney Company for a few months, had done a deal with Steven Jobs, and this was big for multiple reasons, not the least of which Disney's and Apple's relationship had sort of hit some rough patches. I forget why, but it did. And so one of Iger's first big missions was to repair that damage. And he did it by striking a deal, as I reported in Variety, Hollywood has that iPod itch. Disney on board as Apple expands its vision. And the lead of my story from October 2005, Apple Computer's Hush Hush special event Wednesday had only one big surprise, but it was a doozy. CEO Steve Jobs unveiled the long-awaited video iPod Wednesday and a new version of his iTunes software with video downloads to go with it. And the shocker came when Bob Iger and Walt Disney said that they're going to provide some of their most popular shows from ABC and the Disney Channel for pay-per-download on iTunes, which was also relatively new. And this was the first time, as you recall, that, you know, a Hollywood, major Hollywood power had tried to, you know, this was the time when Hollywood was suing YouTube. Well, yeah, it was when Hollywood was suing YouTube. I mean, it was before that, but certainly where piracy was definitely thing. And or just starting to be, and they've been through the Napster of it all, and everyone in Hollywood was like, are we going to be Napster? You know, is it going to be anyway? So they made this deal for, you know, next day episodes of Desperate Housewives and Lost, and a couple other shows, That's So Raven. And everyone was like, can you do that? And it was the first time actually that you could actually, you didn't need a TV antenna or a cable system to get current season shows. If you had DVDs of past seasons, there were ways to catch up, but never could you in real time just sort of keep up with the hottest shows on TV. And it was a huge deal. And Bob Iger was ahead of his time on that, because obviously we know where this led to, even though there were a lot of people who said it was a ridiculous deal, that it was going to ruin Hollywood, it was going to kill the cable bundle and the model, all of which came true, but not because of this deal.
Right.
It's because the internet was taking over streaming. What we now know as streaming was going to replace broadcast and cable, and Bob Iger got ahead of it. So now I hear this deal today, and immediately in my mind, I think, okay, that's what Bob Iger, who, by the way, in a month or two is set to announce for the second time who a successor will be and is ready to step down 20 years later, probably sees this sort of deal, this first deal by a major Hollywood studio to say, fine, we're giving you our stuff and you can play with it and you can make your AI nonsense access to it. And I think in his mind, he's thinking, I'm being visionary again. I know people will hate it and the Hollywood guilds are going to yell about it, but we got to do this because if we don't, the future will eat us. And is he right? I don't know, honestly. You know, the critics were wrong about Iger's iTunes deal, sort of. Who knows? Maybe if that deal hadn't happened, we could have found more time to avoid the future. But I doubt it.
No.
But what I do know is this. I don't know Sam Altman, and he's not a friend of mine. I don't really believe that Sam Altman, for all that he believes he could be, I don't think he's the next Steve Jobs. I just don't think I don't think what he's doing is the same as what Steve built and what Apple built. And while both certainly took advantage of Hollywood and other people's work, it's in a different way. And I don't know. I get why he's doing this deal. I don't think it's the end of the world, but I don't know how much it's going to pay off. Certainly the part where they invest $1 billion in the company.
Right. I mean, OpenAI, you know, it may, that might be a smart investment. It might not be. We'll see. But okay. So it's for these short videos. I mean, this may turn out like the iTunes thing to actually almost be nothing, but kind of augur something is coming down the road, and this may not be it. But when I look at this, I think, well, first off, he's setting a precedent, which is there's a license for the content, right? What this is doing in some ways is having OpenAI admit basically like, yeah, we need to pay you or get your permission, you know, whatever the deal is, to license these characters. We can't just create them out of whole cloth because you own them, and that's going to be an infringement. And that's one of the great debates is, you know, do they need to go back and license everything from everybody if their model is going to put this stuff out? Now, I think in practice, they have ripped off everybody, and what they've done is put up a bunch of guardrails to try and prevent the creation of infringing material, probably not effectively. And in this case, they're going to be able to instead encourage the use of Disney content because it's actually allowed and it's got the blessing of Disney. Also, it strikes me that this is them sort of saying, well, you know, this is not a big deal. These are like toys to be played with. They're video toys to make little tiny clips that's sort of like in some ways promotes the Disney characters and properties. And, you know, Iger's statement is that it's not a threat to creators because these are 30-second videos that people are just kind of going to be able to generate, and it's not that big a deal. I think that's actually probably true, and I think that it's a good thing that OpenAI is licensing intellectual property instead of sort of saying, well, if we generate it, it doesn't matter, which is just would blow a hole in the side of Hollywood and all other, you know, publishing and everything, if copyright doesn't matter, if it comes out of an AI. But I do wonder if the end game here is that it's not going to matter, because this is not where the job loss is going to happen. It's going to happen when their animation studio begins building AI models that, and I don't believe like you're going to be able to type in a few words and create a Pixar movie, but I do think that there are going to be places where it creeps in, right? And where, an animation step that used to take 10 very technical people now takes 7 technical people because there's some AI tools, and it just kind of creeps like that until half the people who used to work on that stuff are out of work. And I think that's the great threat that AI brings. I also don't think it can be stopped.
It's incredibly depressing. The part that's most insidious to me is the fact that as part of this deal, Disney is also going to put some of these Frankenstein creations that OpenAI, Sora, whatever it's called, comes up with using Disney characters on Disney Plus.
Yeah.
Right next to Star Wars, you'll be able to watch, George from Ohio's Darth Vader versus Ariel or something. And, that is, on the one hand, why I feel that Disney should certainly have retained the right to do that, because it's their quote unquote content, and maybe something big will happen, and they're going to want to be able to platform it. But outside of that, but actually saying we're going to do it, that to me is a way of sort of making sort of the turning the temperature up on the water that we're all frogs boiling, of like sort of saying, hey, there's no difference between this and this. It's all sort of the same thing. And that stuff that a writer worked on, the new sequel that rebooted, this Marvel character or the Muppets, some idiot put in some words into a computer screen and 5 minutes later turned up this. And isn't this just as good? And maybe it will be. Maybe there's no stopping it. I've seen some stuff that's AI generated that's interesting, but
it won't be. But I would caution at saying that they're even at the same level. I imagine what they're doing is basically, this is also an experiment in platforming user generated content that uses Disney's intellectual property, which, quite honestly, given the number one video platform in the world is YouTube, where all sorts of stuff like that happens. The idea that Disney might want to experiment with some content that's basically made by other people, and then it's free and it's given and Disney has the right to show it, and it's going to be curated and all of those things, I don't know. That feels to me more like it's a way to get viral videos and videos and things like that.
I would be for that if it was actually involving real fans and was actually sort of, hey, we did our spoof on High School Musical, or here is Star Wars in 30 seconds. That stuff, great, because that actually involves human imagination and dreaming. Not the case with this crap. Now, again, one of my editors said, well, it's still sort of being written by humans because you have to write the prompts and you have to do this and the script. I'm like, I guess, maybe, but I don't know. I still think the execution is still all electronic, but maybe I'm just an old man.
I mean, we'll see what it is, but I'll just say that whatever might get on Disney Plus as a 30-second short or in a shorts package or something like that will be the top 0.01% of the slop that's generated
right.
by the AI.
That's true.
It will be curated
yep.
by various layers, like starting with the people who put in the prompts and go, well, that sucked. And they do it 10 more times before they get one that they can post on Instagram. And then only, one of 1,000 of those is any good. And that one goes to somebody at Disney who puts it in a pile with 50 others, and only 2 of those get right. Like some of that is, it's almost like random noise, but I don't know. I don't know if that's necessarily that much worse than other kinds of fan generated content, but we'll have to see. I don't know, part of me just says, look, he's a CEO, there's a lot of money, there's a lot of AI buzz, everybody's going to ask what your AI strategy is, so better get out in front of it with something that is a limited time license. They can back away from it, it's very limited in scope, and it makes Bob Iger seem like a visionary and that he's got an AI strategy.
Well, and that's the thing, and I think that's why I tied it back to 20 years ago, because Bob started that deal was, we joke about the day Trump became president. That was the day Bob Iger became CEO of Disney, right? It was actually a few months earlier, but that deal announced, I'm here, I'm making big moves, I'm getting us back in business with Apple, all the stuff that followed, the Pixar stuff, right? I believe the timeline better than I do of what happened with all that. But certainly, and by the way, if things would have happened, there's some people who think that Disney would have ultimately ended up, Apple and Disney might have merged at some point, had Jobs left. I don't know. But I feel like in the same way that Bob began with a bang, to me, I'll bet you 10-1 as he's thinking about this in the back of his mind is saying, this is a nice way to close out my term, saying I let us into, because think of all the profiles that are going to be written when he retires again. It's going to be, he started doing this, he ended doing this, and already this is Bob Iger and what he did.
Yeah. At
and we'll see if it proves to be a good call or not.
I looked it up, Joe. Disney bought Pixar 3 months after the TV shows on iTunes deal.
There you go. It was definitely the ground floor.
So that way they were already, working on that. And that, Steve Jobs became Disney's biggest single shareholder when that happened. Really funny.
Well, what do you think would have happened if Disney and Apple had become one company? We would have had an Apple TV. We might have had something else. It'd be very interesting, though.
It would. What would it be like if a movie studio with lots of intellectual property merged with a tech company?
Whoa.
Hmm.
Could that ever happen?
I don't know.
That would be a big to-dum.
This episode of Downstream is brought to you by Factor. Eating well during the holidays can feel like an impossible task. We're short on time, surrounded by treats. Oh man, there's fudge sitting on my table right now. Thankfully, Factor is on hand. They've got chef-prepared, dietitian-approved meals that will help you stay balanced and energized through the most indulgent time of the year. One of the solutions to not snacking on that stuff is to eat well, so you feel satisfied. Unlike meal kits that require prep and cooking, Factor will deliver fully prepared, ready-to-eat meals in just 2 minutes. There's one in my fridge right now, and it's going to be my dinner. With Factor, you get more variety and more meals. Choose from a wider selection of weekly meal options, including premium seafood choices like salmon and shrimp at no extra cost. My mom always gets the salmon. We get Factor for her because she doesn't want to cook for herself anymore, and we want her to eat food so she has the energy to live her life. Factor is our solution. Factor can support your wellness goals. They've got GLP-1 friendly meals. They've got a new Mediterranean diet option that's packed with protein and good for you fats. Perfect for when you're surrounded by that fudge, those cookies, that Chex Mix. And there are global flavors, Asian-inspired meals with bold flavors from China, Thailand, and elsewhere. Savory Korean beef bowls. I've had that. It's really good. Thai-style coconut curry, a refreshing break from traditional holiday fare. 97% of Factor customers say the Factor has helped them live a healthier life. Real human beings with real results, staying on track, even now during the most indulgent season. As I've said, we bought Factor for my mom. My wife works at a library. She's got to have lunch every day, and once a week, she's got to have dinner. Factor meals go out the door with her. Sometimes she leaves some of them behind for her husband to eat. So when she's at the library tonight, I'm going to be having dinner for one. It's going to be barbecue chicken from Factor. Looking forward to it a lot. Eat smart. FactorMeals.com/Downstream50 off and use the code Downstream50 off to get 50% off on your first box plus free breakfast for 1 year. That's code Downstream50 off at FactorMeals.com to get 50% off plus free breakfast for 1 year. This exclusive holiday offer won't last. Lock in your savings before the new year rush. Offer only valid for new Factor customers with code and qualifying auto-renewing subscription purchase. Thank you, Factor, for making me dinner tonight. And for supporting Downstream. Yeah, Netflix becoming more like the cable company all the time. We'll see where it goes from here. Okay, let's move on to letters from listeners. I got a good, funny letter. John wrote in following up about the fact that TNT is broadcasting The Pit, which, is one of the, we'll just say it again, one of the best shows of the year, if not the best show of the year. I think Seppenwall put it number one or number two. You know, it's in there and it's going to be high on a lot of people's lists. John wrote in and said, acknowledging the Pitt's core mission to accurately depict the realities of an emergency department, TNT will broadcast the series as it originally streamed on HBO Max. That was a statement. This has been proven to be inaccurate, John says. The F-bombs have, in fact, been edited out of the TNT broadcast. Credit where credit is due. The graphic imagery does appear to be unaltered. Warner Brothers' definition of as it originally streamed seems to differ from mine. I just thought this was very funny. It's like, what happens when they put the Pit on TV? And the answer is, well, maybe the F-bombs do get looped out.
Well, now I'm going to need to see some proof of this, John, because I wrote about that and they had said that they would air those F-bombs and there's no reason not to air those F-bombs. So I need to know, you need to tell me exactly which F-bomb so I can then check
John,
it to your feed.
Give us some details.
Give us some details.
We want to know how the sanitization of the Pit happened on TNT, if it did. Interesting idea to do that. Also, did they do that and that's just when it's airing, you know, when kids are awake or something? I don't know.
No,
I don't know
what they did. And they're pushed at 10 o'clock, so I don't know. But I will try to follow up on that too, because that's a good little story, because I will feel personally offended if they went back, if they succumbed.
All right.
To advertiser demand.
Truth or not, somebody let us know. That's downstreamfeedback.com if you'd like to send it in that way. And before we go, I like to do TV picks where we talk about stuff that's on TV that you might want to watch. Joe, any suggestions for people this time?
Well, I'm going to do what I'm watching now. It's a returning show, but it's one that, based upon the numbers that are coming out from Netflix, I don't know about Nielsen yet, it's A Man on the Inside,
Yay.
Season 2. It's the Mike Schur created Ted Danson starring comedy on Netflix. I am doing what I did last year, and I am watching Season 2 of Nobody Wants Us, and also another show that's fun, with Season 2 of A Man on the Inside on Sunday nights. It's my own personal 1 hour
comedy
CTV
block.
Exactly, as I want to do. But Man on the Inside is the show that I'm definitely recommending, because Nobody Wants Us is sort of going over the same thing. And it's sort of nice and mellow, and it feels like the second part of Season 1. But because there's been a whole sort of reboot of A Man on the Inside, and our man Ted is now a college professor. One of his new colleagues at the college is played by none other than his wife, Mary Steenburgen.
Yeah.
And they are amazing together. I have no idea how the case is going to solve itself, but along with, Only Murders in the Building, I'm just here for the fun, for the ride. It's a pleasant, cozy calm. And really, please watch this show, because I'm very, very worried that it's not going to be Season 3. And that would be a shame, because this is a great concept. It's great. It's familiar. And again, this is the one thing that Netflix does horribly, which is it doesn't always support these shows that are niche, especially if they show a Season 1 did, that they get a little bit of traction. I'm fearing that it's been lost in the shuffle of Stranger Things, and Nobody Wants This, but yeah, definitely I love Season 2.
Cosign, that was going to be my second choice if I had a second one, because I think A Man on the Inside, yeah, great, gentle, fun, sweet, funny, just a pleasant watch.
Have you seen the whole season?
I have not seen the whole season. I've seen about half of it so far.
That's about the same. So all right. Hopefully it sticks the landing, but I trust in Mike Schur.
I do trust in Mike Schur as well. All right, my pick is going to be Ken Burns, The American Revolution on PBS.
Such a dad.
I've been watching. Keith David does some voices, and I'm like, oh, it's the narrator of baseball now in The American Revolution. it's Ken Burns, you know, the guy who did the Civil War and all that. It's long. Is it long? Yes, it is. But what I'll say about it is he and his collaborators are great storytellers. I think they did a really good job with it. And what I would say is one of my favorite podcast right now is The Rest is History. And it's two British historians. And the reason I got into The Rest is History is somebody on social or something said, you should listen. Americans should listen to their episodes about the American Revolution. Because
Conan O'Brien loves this show, right?
Yeah, it is. He's just been on it again.
Yeah.
It's so great. And they had the British perspective on the American Revolution. And it's not just the British perspective, because they joke about it. We're all tax dodgers, things like that. But but it blew my mind, because there are things that are true about the American Revolution that American school children are never taught. And I'll say, watching the American Revolution on PBS, it's very similar. You have this idea of what it is, but the American Revolution, because it takes the time to tell the story and lots of aspects of the story, you get a much different picture, I think, certainly from what I thought, of how the revolution goes and what the motivations are and things that you kind of take for granted that weren't really there. It's really well done. And yeah, you're going to have to invest whatever it is, 10, 12 hours. I don't know how many hours it is. I watch it on PBS Passport because I support my local PBS station, so I can just stream it. I don't have to worry about it. I do recommend it, though. I mean, it's Ken Burns. He does great work. And this is if you remember watching the Civil War a million years ago, well, he did the American Revolution finally, or baseball, or jazz. One of my favorite jokes that a friend of mine made was, he wrote a post. The headline was "Local Man Finishes Jazz," because that was long. Boy, that was a long. They're all very long, but it's really good. So
now, how does George Washington come off in this story?
It's all of it. Like it's his brilliance and his doubts, and the fact that there is the tension. One of the things Burns points out from the beginning, and this will be no surprise to people who've seen baseball or the Civil War, is the inherent tension about the slave states and the states that don't rely on slavery, and the fact that George Washington has a plantation with slaves, and that is a politically relevant thing. There's a question of whether black soldiers are going to be allowed in the Continental Army. All of those things are in there. You know, he's a complicated guy, I guess I would say. I think on balance, a person with more heroic qualities than not, but like Ken Burns is not gonna, Ken Burns' job is not to make myths. I'll put it that way. And I think it's just very well done.
You don't know George.
Yeah, there you go.
I don't know.
So those are good picks. And we have reached the end. Now, if you haven't yet, please consider subscribing to Downstream Plus. If you are not a Downstream Plus subscriber, you did not get our complete download on Warner Brothers Discovery and the purchase by Netflix and or Paramount. So every other episode, more or less, most of the show is available just for supporters. If you'd like to support us, go to downstream.plus. It's one of the reasons that we can do this show is because of your support. You get full versions of every episode. It's ad-free as well, and you get access to the Relay Discord, bonus shows from Relay, and a whole lot more. If you have a question or a suggestion for us, again, downstreamfeedback.com. We love to hear from you. Love to your mothers. And you can find me at sixcolors.com. I appear at many other podcasts at Relay and theincomparable.com. Joe, where can people find your stuff?
You can find me on www.vulture.com/buffering, or you can find me on the blue skies at TV MOJOE. That's TV right. Mojo.
Just search for Buffering Vulture and you will find a buffering vulture named Joe Adalian.
That's exactly. I'm always buffering.
Yes.
I'm buffering right now.
And thank you to everybody. We will be back in a couple of weeks with another special holiday edition, I suppose, of Downstream. But until then, thanks for listening.